for us in 2 Samuel chapter 9. 2 Samuel chapter 9. I want to start reading at verse 6. I want to read 6 through 8 and then skip to verse 13. 2 Samuel chapter 9, starting at verse 6. That text says, when Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. David said, Mephibosheth, your servant, he replied. Don't be afraid, David said to him, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather, Saul, and you will always eat at my table. Mephibosheth bowed down and said, what is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me? Verse 13, and Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. And listen, he was crippled in both feet. I want to talk about a blessed crippled person. A blessed crippled person. This is probably not one of your top 10 favorite stories in the Bible. But I'm happy to report that no matter how obscure the text may be, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. And therefore, when the Bible speaks, we ought to listen and pay attention. Here we see that Saul and his son Jonathan had been killed in battle. Jonathan, the very dear friend of David, had a son by the name of Mephibosheth, whose name I've been practicing all week long. Mephibosheth was crippled in both of his feet. 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4 gives you the background, and his nurse was trying to help him escape. They mess around and fell, and the boy's feet got all messed up. And so he was crippled. But in spite of him being crippled, he was awfully blessed, because everybody don't sit at the king's table. And you surely don't sit there day after day. But Mephibosheth was a daily guest of the king. He was a blessed, crippled person. Now, if we pass the mic, I don't think it would be hard to find somebody who could identify with this boy's crippledness. All of us got a war story of how something is kind of jacked up in our lives. But what the preacher came by to talk about is how you can be crippled and blessed at the same time. The Lord can put your crippled feet under the king's table. And it becomes then your task to figure out, how do you describe yourself? Do you describe yourself as blessed, or do you describe yourself as crippled, or do you at least have enough sense to say, I'm blessed and crippled at the same time? What I want to talk about this morning is how we should be mindful of humility, blessings, and being crippled. Humility, blessings, and being crippled is what I'm talking about. Humility. The boy's humility, Mephibosheth, caught my attention. Now, when you get home and you're trying to read this text again and you can't say Mephibosheth, just call him Mark. Amen. Just call him Mark. That's his nickname. Amen. If you can't remember Mephibosheth, just call him Mark. He know what you're talking about. This boy's humility caught my attention. When he appeared before the king, he presented himself as servant of the king. When David told him how he would be a guest at the table, Mephibosheth referred to himself as nothing but a dead dog. This young man did not go to David as if he was a peer of David. He went understanding the importance of humility. Now, there's somebody here who has had humility forced upon you. That is, in a capitalistic society, when you don't have much capital, whether you want to be humble or not, this world will humble you. When you don't have the right letters behind your name or the right title in front of your name, sometimes there are those who kind of push you to the bottom level. When your gender is not right, when your race is not right, there are forces in this world that forces you into a position of humility, whether you want to be humble or not. But there are three reasons why everybody in the room ought to work on being humble. Three reasons why you and I, no matter what we have, ought to work on humility. Y'all ready for the three reasons? The first one is that all that we have comes from God. All that we have comes from God. You must have heard Psalms 100 verse 3 says, it is he who made us and not we ourselves. James 1:17 says that God is the giver of every good and perfect gift. Anything that tempts us to brag or boast is a gift from the Lord. All of our status was given to us by God. All of our stuff has been given to us by God. Our very lives are a gift of God. You are not ever get this thing twisted and think you are all of that. The only reason you and I are here is because of God's favor. If you take God's favor away, we would have nothing. Why did the tornado hit down there instead of up here? It's not because we are holier. It's not because we are better. It's because God showed favor. Why does one child go to college and the other child go to jail? It may have to do with favor. Why does one go up and the other go down? It may have to do with favor. All that we have comes from God. But there's a second reason why we ought to work on humility, and that is it can all be taken away. Everything that tempts you to be snobbish, everything that has your nose all up in the air, your chest all puffed out, all of that stuff can be taken before the sun goes down. You could have walked in here feeling pretty good today, but before the benediction is given, you could be so sick that you pray for death to come quickly into your life. You can walk out the door and miss your footing, slip on these concrete stairs, hit your head, and incur an injury that changes your personality for the rest of your life. All we have can be taken away. The relationships that we have can change from friend to foe at the drop of a hat. All of your stuff can be gone. The car that you're so proud of may already be gone. The house that you pride yourself in can be on fire as I'm talking. All of our stuff can be gone. That's why you are not ever judge yourself, define yourself by measure of your stuff. You are not your stuff. Don't ever let the car make you. You make the car. Don't let the outfit make you. You make the outfit. So if you're driving good, praise the Lord. But when you walk, you ought to walk with your head up. I'm still a child of the King. I was a child when I was driving, and now I'm a child on the bus, and I'll be a child when I walk. I'm not my stuff. I'm a king's kid with or without my stuff. This is important because all of our stuff can be taken away. And oh, what a timely word for an American church. A people who really don't know what it feels like to have war on our stomping ground. It's a reason why we're always sending troops overseas, because we want the bombs to drop over there. We would rather write checks and rebuild other countries as opposed to have our buildings tore down over here. But you know, some of these variables are not in our control. Everybody getting a bomb, and this germ warfare got everybody a little concerned, and this technological bomb that they could send, that as we become more and more addicted to technology, they can send stuff to mess up our computers, and the world as we know it comes to a screeching halt. And then we will need to revisit that we are not our stuff. We are not our fine clothes. We are not our home. We are not our car. We are not the corner office in our building. It can all be taken away. Here's a third reason why we ought to work on humility. Y'all still here? I told you that all we have came from God. It can all be taken away. Here's the third reason. Humility can open doors for us. Humility can open doors for us. I wish there were even more young people here to hear me say that it's still appropriate to say, yes, ma'am, no, sir, please, may I, thank you, eye-to-eye contact, firm handshake, stand up when people are talking to you, learn how to be quiet when grown folk are talking. Humility can open doors for you. That if you act like you halfway got some sense and you act like you'll do something with help, you'll be surprised how many people are willing to help an humble person. But when you are arrogant, when you have an attitude about you that you are entitled, Mephibosheth did not come to David with a spirit of entitlement. Well, my daddy used to be the king's son, so I ought to be sitting at the table. I used to sit at the table under the old administration. I don't see why I wouldn't be sitting under the new administration. If Mephibosheth's head would have got to moving, I'm not sure we'd be preaching about him today. But because he was humble, we're talking about him sitting at the king's table. And some of us might have more if our attitude was more humble. It's hard to bless an arrogant person. It's hard to help somebody that think they just know everything. It's hard to help somebody who's disrespectfully arrogant. Now, you might be smart, but you don't know everything. The Bible says, Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16, 17, Proverbs 6, 16 and 17, there are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. At the top of the list, haughty eyes. And right up under haughty eyes, a lying tongue. Paul said it in Romans 12, verse 3, that we ought not think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. If you would humble yourself, somebody might help you. But when you're haughty, when you're arrogant, when you have a spirit of entitlement, not only will people let you bust your head on that wall, they might push you, help you bust your head on the wall. I talked about humility. I'm moving now. I'm talking about blessings. Blessings now. I'm talking about blessings. This boy, Mephibosheth, was blessed not only to be alive, because you do know there are some leaders who are so insecure that one of their first orders of business is to remove all of the landmarks. When they come to office, one of the first things they do is get rid of anything that reminds you of the old regime. Mephibosheth was a reminder of Saul's administration. David could have had him wiped out. David could have, at very least, ignored this boy. But David decided to be a blessing to Mephibosheth. He allows him to not just come and visit the king, but he has a daily spot at the king's table. He's a blessed man. Now let's look a little closer. What triggers this? It was the death of Jonathan. How many of you all know that those you love will either die on you or you're gonna mess around and die on them? Death is sure to come. I heard Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27 says, man is destined to die once, and after that, they have to go face the judgment. You and I are going to leave here. And I don't care how holy, how spiritual, how strong you think you are, if somebody you love enough dies, it hurts. Some widow or widower could take the mic here and talk about how, yes, Reverend, it hurts. Decades after the fact, some parent has had to bury their child and knows the pain of burying the fruit of their womb. Children have had to bury parents. Friends have had to bury friends. I must admit, there are times I look around the church and I see different people sitting in seats where trusted friends used to sit. I was sharing this morning that there was a deacon at the church I pastored in Dayton, Deacon Herman Moon. He died probably about 3 years after I was there, but the Lord blessed us to just have a unique bond. You would have to know Moon to appreciate him. He was about as crazy as he could be, but he was faithful. He was the treasurer of the church, did an outstanding job, and here it is now over 10 years later, whole new city, whole new church, and yet when I think about grief, perhaps one of the names on the very short list is that of my dear friend, Deacon Herman Moon. Keep on living, and you'll have a story to tell about somebody you miss that you've met along life's journey. Now, I move from such a morbid idea to this concept I call memorial benevolence. Say it with me, memorial benevolence. One more time, memorial, you got it. What in the world is that, Reverend? That's doing something good in memory of the deceased. What is memorial benevolence? It is doing something good in the name of the deceased. You've heard of people sponsoring scholarships in the name of somebody who's passed. They've given donations. There's plaques around most of our churches because somebody died and you're trying to keep the legacy alive. You're trying to do something good in the memory and honor of the deceased. I think this is a much better use of your energy than to sit around and plan to have a pity party. You know, there are people who just get ready to cry on Mother's Day and Father's Day. I mean, they go out and buy extra Kleenex because they're getting ready to cry. They want to have a pity party. I'm here to tell you that whoever loved you would want you to somehow, some way, after some days, suck it up and be able to move on with your life, because one day you're not going to be out here crying. You're going to be the one in the grave. And what we're going to be crying about is not only that you're gone, but we're going to be crying about how much time you wasted crying over what everybody around here got to do one day. You and I have to leave this planet one day. And therefore, instead of us going and get our head bad and pulling the shades down, pulling out our blues songs and crying about how bad life is, you might want to consider memorial benevolence. Instead of using that energy to have a pity party about how God has moved at his own whim, perhaps we ought to use that energy to be a blessing to somebody. Because listen, God is still alive. I said, God is still alive. Parent might be gone. Child might be gone. Spouse might be gone. Friend might be gone. But God is still alive. And God still has a marvelous plan for your life. And he's working things out for your good if you can just keep your hand in his hand. Memorial benevolence is inspired by David. I can't take credit for it. The reason why David was kind to Mephibosheth, it was because David was trying to honor the memory of his dear friend, Jonathan. What do you do with continued grief? Does it ever move you to do anything positive, or does your grief only cause you to cry, at best, therapeutic tears? Finally, before I move on, I want to talk about how we are benefactors. Somebody say benefactor. We have benefited and we are benefiting because of what our foreparents put in place for us. Mephibosheth is at King David's table because his daddy was friends with the king. Are y'all listening to me? I pray to God that Mephibosheth appreciated what his father set up for him more than we tend to appreciate what our foreparents put in place for us. I hope I'm wrong. It won't be the first time. But it seems to me as if we just about tired of talking about the sacrifices that people have made for us. But I'm here to tell you that as long as you enjoy the benefits, you are not mind calling the name of the one who paid for the benefit. It is no secret that had it not been for our foreparents, and I use that term intentionally, it was not just our forefathers, it was also our foremothers. Therefore, it was our foreparents. Had it not been for the sacrifices of our foreparents, we would not be here today. The cars we drive, the houses we live in, the degrees that the Lord has blessed us to have, the little change we got in our pocket, it is all a result of blood, sweat, and tears of our foreparents. You didn't just get here by yourself. It wasn't Lil Wayne that got us here. Snoop Doggy Dog, he ain't get this. But it was some folk who had some dogs sicked on them, man. Fire hoses turned on them. Some men have been lynched. Some women have been raped so that their children and their children's children might be able to make something out of themselves. It is not strange for when I go to the convention or go on a revival somewhere, for me to go to a hotel room. And I'm oftentimes made aware of how, you know, people try to be kind. It's customer service. But it always catches my attention. And I know if I say white, y'all gonna say, so light. I didn't say white, I said light. When I see light people come and carry my bag, it always catches my attention. Because I'm reminded of how nasty they would have been to my grandfather. You know, you get on the highway now and you drive about 6-8 hours, you're ready to pull over. You're looking for a Holiday Inn or whatever you can afford. What's the big deal? I got the money, let me up in here, no problem. But when my grandfather, Cleveland Baines, decided that he wanted to drive from Buffalo, New York, down to Skippers or Emporia, Virginia, it was a little bit more complicated for him. That it wasn't no Holiday Inn for him. That they had to pack up boxes of chicken. And they had to pack up enough food to get them all the way down to where they was going, because they didn't know if there was any restaurant that would allow their kind to come in and to spend money with them. And my Lord, for a black man to be able to lie down in a Holiday Inn, have you lost your mind? You better pull over on the side of the road, get a nap, and get up and drive on down your way. But oh, look how far we've come. When I walk in the restaurant now, I got light people that say, "Can I carry your bag, sir?" They wouldn't have said that to my grandfather. And woe unto me if I ever get so focused on the future that I forget that there was a Baines Sr. and a Cleveland Baines and a Solomon Baines and so many others who paved the way, and I am the benefactor of what they have paid for. And it's not just me. You are the benefactor of people who have put their life in harm's way. And I pray, God, that we appreciate it. When I look at what a chore it seems to be for us to just rehearse the history, when I look at how fuzzy our historic memory is becoming, it makes me wonder, do we really appreciate being a benefactor? Mephibosheth was the benefactor of blessing because of his daddy. And everybody sitting around this room is here. We are here because of our foreparents' sacrifice. I'm about ready to come in talking now about being crippled. Y'all still here? I started off talking about humility. I said something about blessings. Now I'm talking about being crippled. This boy, Mephibosheth, his feet don't work. 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4 says there was a stumbling and a falling, and the result was his feet got messed up. No track for Mephibosheth. No football, no basketball, no soccer for him. No running around with the other kids. Both of his feet are messed up. And you know, there's somebody sitting here today who have some form of crippledness in your life. Something don't work right. You're not dead, but it's not the way it ought to be. And maybe you are like Mephibosheth. You have a crippledness that is not your fault. Can't nobody blame Mephibosheth for his lame feet. He fell. It was an accident. But into all of our lives, some rain and pain must fall and must come. Just keep on living. If you don't know what I'm talking about right now, just keep on living, and you'll understand why the pastor paused at Matthew 5:45, that says God causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Let me get a little closer to you. There may be somebody sitting here, find themselves still victimized by memory and psychological scar of child abuse. Perhaps you were molested as a child, at least abused as a child. And I don't care what they've told you. And let me pause here and talk especially to the sisters, because you know we can say some stupid stuff to girls when we don't think very well. I've heard grown folks say, "Well, if you wasn't so fast, then nothing would have happened to you." Listen, baby, I don't care how fast you were, you have never earned a man raping you, molesting you. I wouldn't care if you took off all your clothes, did somersaults in the middle of the floor. A grown man ought not put his hands on a child. If you have been molested, it was not your fault. Well, mama said, forget what mama done said. The preacher said, it was not your fault. That there are people sitting here now all jacked up in your head because of some crippledness that happened 20, 30, 40 years ago. That's why you can't be intimate with nobody. That's why you can't trust nobody. You're always skeptical of hugging somebody. You always think somebody wants something from you, because that's how your mind has been messed up. You've been victimized by abuse. And it's not your fault. Others are victimized by racism. You're smart enough for the job, you're just too brown or too dark for the job. You're smart enough for the job, you just have the wrong gender for the job. There are people right here in this community that could do marvelous things if they were not victimized by Christian apathy. There are people right here in Avondale who could do better with their lives if they were not the victim of Christian apathy. If it wasn't so many drive-through Christians. If it wasn't so many people who felt as if religion is measured by how I look and how I shout on Sunday only. But if we could ever get in our spirit that we are the salt of the earth and this is part of the earth, we're the light of the world, this is part of the world. If they could ever find out that this power that we experience on Sunday ought to empower us to make a difference right here where God has planted us. They could be so much further down the road, but sometimes they are victimized by Christian apathy. Sometimes the crippledness in our life is not our fault. But then, sometimes it is. I know you don't want to hear this part of the sermon, but I got to tell you. Sometimes the reason we're so messed up is because we did the wrong thing. We failed to do the right thing. Galatians chapter 6 verse 7 teaches that you're going to reap what you have sown. Some people are HIV positive and got full-blown AIDS because they had sex with everything that they could catch. You can't sleep with every skirt and then be surprised when you come up positive. You can't lay down with every man that call you baby and then come shocked that you got an STD. Why y'all looking at me like that? I'm just talking about what I'm talking about. Sometimes we've made bad decisions. You can't use unclean needles and then be shocked that you got staph infection. Sometimes our health challenges, this is a little less offensive. Y'all felt like, look like I got a little close on that STD stuff. Let me come back over here to something a little bit more. So, some of y'all look like, tall, who told Pastor what? Sometimes our health challenges. Say, I don't know why my health is so bad. Have you forgotten how you've been eating all of your life? Have you been forgetting the lack of exercise in your life? And you do know operating the remote control is not exercise. That's not exercise. Walking to the refrigerator, getting a brew, walking back over here, that ain't no power walking. You can't remember the last time you've been to the doctor and you want to know why your health is so bad. You've been smoking your way, drinking your way, drugging your way to an early, painful death. And then there are others, now that you sold out for the Lord, you're trying to act like life started now. Have you forgotten what you've been doing with the previous 30, 40 years of your life? You're trying to figure out why you're so broke. Have you forgotten that when you were supposed to have been learning a skill, a trade, trying to acquire knowledge, trying to network, trying to get into a career path, have you forgotten how you wasn't worried with that? You just wanted to be cool? Well, this is the consequence. You still cool. I mean, you got swagger. It's a broke swagger, but you cool. I mean, man, can't nobody beat you walking. You got that walk. Woo, you cool, bruh. But you at the bus stop. 70 years old. Still cool, still pimping. Reverend, how I get out here? I've made silly mistakes in my life. I didn't make enough money. I spent what I had. Wasn't thinking about investing. And here I am now, crippled. Listen, no matter how you got crippled, the pastor came by to tell you, stay alive. That's what I'm talking about right now. I'm saying, stay alive. So if you look at your life and say, I'm like Mephibosheth, I'm alive, but my feet are messed up. I'm alive, but I can't move as fast as I want to move. I'm alive, but something is wrong with me and it stands out like a sore thumb. No matter how you got messed up, the pastor came by to tell you to stay alive. The reason I'm telling you to stay alive is because the devil will tell you life is really not worth living when both of your feet are crippled. That's why the preacher is talking to you, because this world will tell you that this world is made for people who have two good feet. But the pastor came by to tell you if you can stay alive even with two bad feet, the Lord can put your bad feet under the king's table. But you got to make up in your mind, I'm going to stay alive. Death and depression and despair, it robs you of the opportunity of tomorrow being a better day. But if you can just stay alive, if you can make up in your mind, I'm going to make it to the morning. Now, come on, let's tell the truth. Sometimes you got to cuss and fuss your way through the night, but do what you got to do to get to the morning. If you can get to the morning, tomorrow can be a better day. Some of you all act like you little bit got it. I see these little petite claps out here. Let me get a little bit closer to you. Maybe you can't identify with what I'm saying. Sometimes your life can be so jacked up that you raise the question in lonely moments, maybe with a bottle of Jack or Hennessy. You ask yourself, is my life really worth living? The addict knows what I'm talking about. Some of y'all too holy to get with this part of the sermon, but the addict knows what I'm talking about. When you've sworn off of drugs, and then that monkey still jumps on your back. And you know, there's still a stigma attached to drugs and drinking. So let me get a little bit closer to you. Maybe you are addicted to pornography. Maybe you are addicted to spending. Maybe you're addicted to gambling. Maybe you're addicted to sex. Maybe you're addicted to eating. And you've said, look, I've been raised better than this. I got better sense than this. I'm going to stop doing this. And you meant it. But the monkey jumped back on your back. And he got heavy. And he got aggravated. And things you said, I ain't going to do it no more, you found yourself doing it again. And sometimes it is in this courtyard of failure that you ask yourself, is life really worth living? The devil say stuff like this, aren't you being a hypocrite? You're supposed to be a Christian. And you look at what you just said. Look at what you just did. And you know, if you hang around the wrong type of church folk, they'll help you feel bad. They'll tell you you ain't nothing but a hypocrite. And they'll help you cry in the courtyard. But listen to what pastor's saying. Pastor said, I don't care how jacked up your life is, if you can just stay alive, God can still do a great thing in your life. Now, what I like about this boy is I don't see a record of his feet ever getting right. I don't read no miraculous story. So his feet were crippled in this chapter, but hold on, three more chapters, and then the Lord made his feet all right. No, it looked like he died with two lame feet, but his feet were under the king's table. And it might be some stuff going on in your life. I can't lie to you, baby. It's jacked up from the flow up. It's messed up. But what I'm telling you is, if you can just keep your hands in the master's hand, the Lord can bless you with your crippled feet. The Lord can bless you with whatever's wrong in your life. If your family's jacked up, and I don't know anything that makes us pray much harder than when family is not right. When your marriage looks like it's going down the toilet. When your children act like they done lost their ever-loving mind. Look what the Lord can do. Now he can, and sometimes he does, put that marriage back together again. Praise the Lord. We know how to shout about that. Sometimes he take the taste of alcohol out of our children's mouth, make them come back home and act like they got some sense. We know how to shout about that. But listen, you better learn how to shout about how God can give you peace in the midst of the storm. The Lord can give you peace in the midst of the divorce court proceedings. The Lord can give you peace even though you can't see your children like you want to see your children. The Lord can give you peace even though your child is incarcerated, locked up in jail. Don't remember the last time you heard him, but he can give you peace that surpasses all understanding. I'm talking about real stuff. I mean, we'll talk about three gates in the east, three gates in the west some other time. I got to be real today. When your money is jacked up, the Lord can make a way if you stay alive. Now, you might not always be eating at Jay Alexander. You might not always be going to Red Lobster. But he can keep some pork and beans on the table. He got some tuna fish. He got some soup. Now I know y'all, I can look at y'all, I ain't eating no soup. I get hungry enough. You'd be surprised what you will eat. The devil wants you to throw in the towel because after all, you got two crippled feet. Look at your friends. Ain't nothing wrong with their feet. Look at the people you grew up with. Look how well they're doing. And look at you with your crippled self. You got two crippled feet. You ought to just kill yourself. You ain't going to be nothing. Preacher came by to tell you, you can be a blessed, crippled person, but you got to stay alive. You got to stay alive. You got to stop looking at your feet and trust that the Lord still has his hands on you. I am not going to promise you what God is going to do, but I can promise you this, he's working it out for your good. I say he's working it out for your good. He is working it out for your good, but you got to stay alive. Game over. If you're talking about, I'm going to clock out, my life is just so messed up, ain't no need in me living, God don't love me. First of all, your feet messed up, but what about your legs? Do you know how many folk don't have no feet, no legs, no arms, can't see, can't hear, and you got everything else going on for you except your feet don't work? You ought to thank God that you're still alive, because if your feet don't work, that means somebody's been carrying you all of this time. And if they've carried you this long, then the Lord is not getting tired. He's not getting weak. He's able to carry you on. Eyes have not seen and ears have not heard. It has not yet entered the hearts of men what God has prepared for those who love the Lord. But you got to trust him enough to hang in there. I see your crippled feet. I know it's messed up. I know that wasn't your plan. But what I'm telling you is God saw the crippled feet and still has a marvelous plan for your life. But you got to stay alive in order to enjoy the blessing. Anybody going to stay alive? I said anybody going to stay alive? Anybody in here with some crippled feet going to stay alive? Praise his holy name. Would you stand? The invitation is extended. If things are not well between God and yourself, today's a good day to come on over on the Lord's side.